right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there, good evening and welcome to the show. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, October 7th and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Paul Corrie and Mark Langdon wrap up all the latest European football news and we continue our build-up to Ireland's World Cup qualifier against Portugal. Declan Quigley will join us to go through all the latest F1 news and what next for Alex Dunn and continued success for Irish cycling.
Plus, League of Ireland director Mark Scanlon joins us to discuss today's €3 million budget announcement for League of Ireland academies. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, Ruby.
How are you, Shane?
I am very well. I'm very well. Spent the day looking at all the funding announcements in the budget. Plenty to take in.
Trying to figure them out.
I had the abacus out, so I did. We'll be speaking to Paul Corrie lately. I think he's a financial background, so I might pick his brain on what it all means. What does it all mean in terms of funding? Well, Ruby, to try and round it up and wrap it all together. Overall, the government is to give €1.5 billion in funding to the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport. An additional €1.6 million will go towards inter-county Gaelic Games players, as well as funding to the IRFU to fund high-performance pathways for women in rugby. The GA are to receive an additional €983,000, the IRFU €727,000, while there'll be an extra €1.5 million made available to the GPA. High performance funding is increased by €1.5 million, while the biggest boost comes in the large scale sport infrastructure fund. An €18.7 million increase will be made available for world class facilities under a new round of the Community Sports Infrastructure Fund. So the GPA welcomed the increase in grants for intercounty players, which rose by 28%. It brings the total player fund to €7.2 million and means the average grant per player will increase to €1,800. So a lot to take in.
A lot to take in. I think when you look at 1.5 million and then break it down to what it equates to, look, it's progress, it's a step in the right direction. I suppose it has to be spread around to go around, Shane, doesn't it? Mm. And look, at least there's no massive cuts to sport.
No. I think we've covered most of the sport there. So as I mentioned, 10.7 million increase for Sport Ireland. It's good when you see the word increase and you see all of that.
And not a decrease.
Yes, most certainly. What else happened today? Three-time Olympian Shane Ryan has announced his retirement from competitive swimming. It ends a career that saw him represent Ireland on the world stage for over a decade. Born in Pennsylvania, US, Ryan moved to Ireland in 2014 and since has led many firsts for Irish swimming, including being the first Irishman to swim at three Olympic Games. He was also the first Irish swimmer to win a world short course medal and a member of the first male relay to represent Ireland at Olympic Games at Tokyo in 2021. He won five major medals in the 50-metre backstroke, first coming in 2017 at the World University Games in Taiwan, where he won gold. He went on to win bronze at the 2018 European Long Course Championships and then claimed Ireland's maiden world short course medal in China later that year. And in 2019, he won European short course bronze in Glasgow. And the 31-year-old's most recent medal came last December, where he took another bronze medal at the World Short Course Championship in Budapest and a host of national records. So one of the
incredible career.
Absolutely. One of the all-time greats. Speaking of swimming, actually just plug tomorrow, we'll be hearing from Roisin Nureen, one of the great para-athletes. Five medals in the Para World Swimming Championship. So Ellen Keane will be joining us to discuss all of that. And rugby. I know you have a keen interest in rugby. I don't know if you're keen interest in the OR 360
I was trying to figure this one out, Shane. You'll have to enlighten me. I got halfway down through the email, but
this modern rugby that they are trying to put front and centre. Well, the following statement has been agreed by the National Rugby Unions of New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Ireland, England, Scotland, France and Italy. It says, as a group of national rugby unions, we are urging extreme caution for players and support staff considering joining the proposed OR360 competition. We all welcome new investment and innovation in rugby and sport ideas that can help the game evolve and reach new audiences. But any new competition must strengthen the sport as a whole, not fragment or weaken it. Among our roles as national unions, we must take a wider view on new propositions and assess their impact on a range of areas, including whether they add to rugby's global ecosystem for which we are all responsible or whether they are a net negative in the game. It's a lengthy statement. Basically, It ends with each of the national unions will therefore be advising men's and women's players that participation in the R360 would make them ineligible for international selection. So
it reads like R360 is LIV.
Yes.
Or a version of.
Yeah.
Basically, from the outside looking at it, trying to read our scan down through it. I hadn't heard of R360 until this evening.
Yeah, trying to make it more attractive to a new audience. It's all about growing the audience. And wasn't that the creation of, we've had this debate many times in Game On, T20 cricket compared to Test cricket. And
yeah.
Trying to attract that more bite-size element to the sport for people with less of an attention span, perhaps. It has its upsides. We mentioned all of...
Give me an upside to this R360 then. Enlighten us and our listeners.
Listen, it could add new fans of rugby, which surely will add to rugby's global ecosystem, as stated in... I love rugby press releases in that regard. So what rugby's global ecosystem quite is, who knows? Brendan Jackman, I think, joins us on Thursday. I'll put that to him on Thursday's show. We went through a lot of budget announcements and we didn't even cover football.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, League of Ireland Academies will receive €3 million in funding from the government in a new measure announced in the budget today. The funding falls short of the €4.45 million requested by the FAI in their pre-budget submission, but represents a big boost to the sport. I'm delighted to say League of Ireland Director Mark Scanlon joins us now. Mark, what's the initial reaction to this news?
Yeah, it's very positive news today, Shane. Very happy to have received the funding, and hopefully it's the start of a really important journey for the future for the development of League of Ireland football. So really want to thank Minister O'Donovan and Minister McConnell Logan, indeed Minister Chambers and Minister Donoghue as well, for all the support. We've received a lot of support this year already via the Department of Communications, Culture and Sport and Sport Ireland with the audit process that was delivered. So this is the next step for us in making sure we develop the academy system and hopefully create a bright future for the young boys and girls and develop Irish football.
So the administration of the multi-annual funding will come through Sport Ireland rather than the FAI. The full amount requested was intended for each club to operate 26 underage academies, male and female, and hire a minimum of 3 full-time staff each. So given it is less, the amount is lower than what was initially requested, what's the scaled-down version of the plans?
Well, at this moment in time, we haven't had the communication yet between ourselves, the department, and Sport Ireland to go through the exact details. So I'm sure that will all be come out in the next couple of weeks. But given the relationship that we have this year and how well we've collaborated together on the audit process, I'm sure we will we'll work that out over the next couple of weeks and see exactly what that will look like, and hopefully be ready to start immediately from the start of 2026. But I think it's a really positive move forward. We haven't had the opportunity before for League of Ireland Academies to be mentioned at all in a government budget. So for this first initiative and opportunity to be in, it gives us something really positive to build on and a great platform to build on all of the brilliant work that's already been done, mostly on a voluntary basis at the clubs already. So I think it's in a good place, and we look forward to looking at what them next steps are and what exactly this first tranche of funding will be spent on. But as you've already outlined, I think the other key aspect of today is not just the amount itself, but that commitment for multi-annual funding, because we're very determined that this is going to be a long-term project and it's certainly not a quick fix. So the commitment to multi-annual funding is very welcome, and I think a really important step that the government have announced today.
Mark, obviously multi-annual is lovely, but I'm sure you would love an increase in that figure year on year, being it multi-annual. So with the €3 million, do you envisage that you'd be able to create enough full-time jobs, create employment, create money going back into the exchequer, and be able to show the government that it's just not all one-way traffic here, and you give us some, we give you some back? Would that be your plan?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Ruby. I think if you look at what's happened already this year, we received 300,000 at the start of this year, which was very welcome to complete the audit process. And I think we've delivered on that on time and within budget to show the need for this year. So the first step now is this €3 million, and hopefully there's an opportunity to grow that in the future. But that's very much down to ourselves and the clubs to make sure that the funding is used appropriately, to make sure that it's spent in the right way, and then to see that return on investment both on the pitch in terms terms of obviously improved performances and development. And then I think football gives an opportunity like no other sport, obviously having the export industry that we do have in terms of opportunities around transfer fees and the increased investment when we have more jobs created, obviously return to the taxpayer and employment in local communities across the country as well, that we'll see a significant return on that investment. And last year we launched an independent economic impact assessment on the League of Ireland that showed 165 million benefit to the economy and 40 million in indirect taxes, and that was before any support and any opportunity to grow the academy system. So I'm sure we can grow that number significantly more in the future with the help of this investment, and it's a very positive step that will allow us to grow.
Mark, Rome wasn't built in a day, and this is an investment in the future. What age bracket or where are you starting? Are you going to think, right, encompass everyone from 18 downwards, or are you going to go a bit younger and make this a long-term investment? What's the general idea?
Yeah, I think it is important in that, like, it is a long-term investment and it will take time. Obviously, the development of players takes the time. They've got to come through the system. So right now, at the minute, the boys' programme starts at under 14 in the League of Ireland clubs and the girls' programme starts at under 17. So part of the investment proposal in the first place was to ensure that the girls started at a younger age as well, to allow the clubs the opportunity to expand the programme. So hopefully we'll see boys and girls coming into the programme from approximately age of 13 years of age into the club for the League of Ireland Academy system. But that work begins obviously an awful lot earlier with the great work done at grassroots clubs across the country where the players get their first steps into football. So the collaboration between League of Ireland clubs and their local grassroots clubs is also an important step in that academy system to make sure that the best young players are identified, given a pathway into the League of Ireland, and hopefully from there progress into youth international teams, into the League of Ireland at senior level, and then hopefully from there on the pitch for a senior men's and women's international team. And the ultimate aim at the end of it will be to see our teams competing in European Championships and in World Cups in the future, and giving a great boost to, across the country. So it works across three different aspects of the game, at grassroots, into League of Ireland, and then onto international.
Minister for Public Expenditure Jack Chambers has, and he said the funding would be part of a €10.7 million increase in funding for Sport Ireland and represented the start of a multi-year commitment to fund grassroots football, as you outlined there. There may be people here that will say that this isn't funding grassroots football. This is funding League of Ireland academies. This is only funding the elite level of underage football. How would you describe the relationship at the moment between League of Ireland clubs underage and indeed grassroots? Because there was great work done with League of Ireland clubs linking up with grassroots clubs, Bows and Kevins and so on, and numerous other examples. But what's the relationship like now, do you feel?
I think it's different from different parts of the country. Like, for example, you know, if you're in a Dublin area, there's obviously a number of clubs in a concentrated area, whereas if you're in a more rural area, or certainly in from some of the cities down in Cork and in Galway and in Waterford, then it's a very different dynamic there of how that's going to work. And I think the League of Ireland clubs have built that relationship over the last few years. The grassroots clubs now are, hopefully a lot more clubs are seeing it as a really important stepping stone. Like, I coach at grassroots level myself, and players that I coach in my daughter's under 14 team, to see them progress to the League of Ireland is an aim for me and the other coaches within the club, and to go to the next level, and hopefully that will continue. But I think the League of Ireland clubs will have a greater opportunity to benefit the grassroots community by working with them local clubs when they've got more full-time staff as well. So be that on the coaching side to help the grassroots clubs and to work with them, or also on that community element. The league clubs have done a fantastic job over the last couple of years in terms of our community development programs. We have Down syndrome futsal in most of our League of Ireland clubs now at the minute. There's amputee football, there's walking football for older people as well. So that growing importance for League of Ireland clubs to make sure that there are positive impact across the community with the grassroots clubs and with different programs is something that will be helped when the clubs have more full-time staff and an opportunity for them to have a greater reach across the community. And then we hope that relationship continues as we move forward.
The head of the Shells Academy, Colly Barron, was on the show a few weeks ago, and he kind of got into the detail that perhaps if there's a certain amount of League of Ireland clubs with the structures in place, that they need to be helped and assisted and aided so they can get the ball rolling in that regard. Would you feel that it has to be focused on a particular set amount of clubs at the start to try and get it going? Or will this be a case of it is shared equally among all League of Ireland clubs?
Well, I think what we'd like to see at the start is a base level of what we expect the minimum standards to be for all clubs. And that's what this investment proposal was based on in the first place, to give all the clubs an opportunity to develop their academy system. And then from there, obviously, the clubs who do the best work, who really want to put their emphasis on youth development and give young players an opportunity, then them clubs will move up in the categorization of academies over time. At this moment in time, that's not in place. But again, part of this investment proposal was to continue the work of the audit process last year, and to develop a new quality assurance and audit program moving forward. So in that first initial 2-year term, we'll then have the opportunity to grade all of the clubs in the various categorizations, and as they move forward, then the clubs who invest more and who work harder on youth development and reach the higher standards, then they'll be rewarded more on the financial aspect, and we'll work with them to help them grow. The clubs who don't, then they'll fall further behind. But we're fully confident that all of the clubs see the importance now of the academy system within their clubs, and they're all continuing to place a further emphasis on it. So, but there will be different categorizations moving forward in the future.
So only 4% of clubs have a full-time head of coaching, as against 46% in equivalent ranked associations, while no League of Ireland clubs have a minimum of 4 full-time academy coaches, compared to 36% in the aforementioned FIFA-ranked countries of similar standard. Do we have the coaches, or are we going to unearth the coaches now we have the funding?
Yes, absolutely. I think the coach education department in the FAI have done a fantastic job over the last number of years, and we've trained up lots of quality coaches. Lots of people have given their time over the years in voluntary positions, and we've lost lots of good coaches to full-time industries overseas as well. So I think the issue for the coaches coming through the system previously is they just didn't have that opportunity to work full-time. And anywhere you see that situation appearing over the last few years, you mentioned Colly Barron at Shells as an example, has done a fantastic job since he's gone in there full time, and there's many others like Collie around the country who would be brilliant to step into them positions when the jobs are created. So so that's what we want to work with. It'll take time then to build that system up over a period of years, and that's why we initially tried to start with the positions of academy director and heads of coaching within all the clubs to bridge that the gap to our European and world counterparts. And as we grow that system forward, then we'll continue to develop the next generation of coaches. But there's lots of really, really good coaches out there, highly qualified, who are waiting for the opportunity to work full time and develop players.
Mark, I'm sure there are not too many kids probably reading the budget, but listening to the chance or the opportunity that might be about to come down the tracks with professional coaches, etc., etc. But this is still going to be for the lucky few that are good enough and can manage to make it to the very, very top. Will it be hard to manage the expectations? And maybe that goes back to Shane's question of the very grassroots level and the League of Ireland level. Will it be hard to manage the expectations and assure people that they're doing the right thing?
Yeah, I think it's all part of the ecosystem. If you look, we currently have over 225,000 registered players playing across the country. And as you said, there's only 2,500 of them that are in the academy system then. So obviously the numbers moving from grassroots to into the League of Ireland system and on to play senior football, it's not going to be that opportunity for everybody. You know that yourself, obviously, Ruby, as an elite sports person, and how difficult it is to get to the top. But having that aspiration for all of us when we start out, when we first kick a ball, to see that pathway here now in our own country to develop through an academy system into first team football, and with the hope one day of representing your country, it's a great aspiration for the kids to have, and that'll only help grow the numbers at grassroots level. And then as the system continues to develop, and the more you know that the players develop, and the more players that go for better transfer fees, and the more money comes back into the system, that money then gets reinvested back into the League of Ireland clubs, and in turn then back into grassroots football. So ultimately that's where it will benefit everybody. If you look at how that works in football economies all over the world, we take countries like Portugal or Belgium, who've developed a really good system over the last number of years, developed players and sold for high transfer fees. You can see how that has a knock-on impact right the way down through the game. And it'll be, again, similar in this situation. They said it will take time to develop that system, but the knock-on effect will benefit the whole of the game.
Mark, before we let you go, just stepping away from the academy and today's news, of course, we have Athlone Town against Bowes to look forward to in the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup final. We two cracking men's semi-finals over the weekend. Might we be aiming for a record attendance in the Aviva Stadium for Cork City and Shamrock Rovers?
Yeah, well, we'd love to aim for a record attendance in both games, Shane. As you said, first coming up is Athlone in their fourth consecutive Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup final, and first opportunity for Bohemians to play at that level, having reached the Women's All-Ireland Cup final this year. So that's a really exciting game on Sunday the 19th of October in Talla Stadium, and we're looking to try and break the record attendance that was 5,000 from a few years ago with your own beloved Shelburne against Athlone, Shane, at that stage. And then, yeah, moving on to the men's final, that's sort of been a target for the last few years. Every time the teams are coming in, everybody's making a push. The clubs are all determined themselves to be part of the record-breaking crowds, and I think they were two brilliant semi-finals. And Shamrock Rovers and Cork City will be very much looking forward to that final, and hopefully we have an opportunity to break the record or certainly go close to it. 43,000 was that record from 2 years ago, and we'd love to get there again this year. Game's on the 9th of November, and tickets go on sale for that game to the supporters tomorrow at midday. So two exciting games.
Lots to look forward to, and what has been a good day for Irish football. League of Ireland Director Mark Scanlon, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on. Association football.
A good day for Irish football, I mentioned there. Would you agree, Paul Curry?
It certainly was. It's definitely a good starting point as well, and a lot has been said about facilities and coaching and getting full-time staff into the League of Ireland clubs in particular at the academy level. And it's needed, Shane, particularly with what has happened with Brexit and the fact that we can't move our best talent across to the likes of the Premier League clubs. We need to ensure that we're putting good facilities and good coaching around those players. So this funding that comes from government is a start, and it's great to see that the work that Mark and Will Clark in particular have done is being listened to.
Yeah, I never mentioned Will Clark in that interview there with Mark. The work he's done over the past few months has been absolutely incredible. And indeed, Mark, and there's so many Cliff Henry and the League of Ireland team within the FAI.
I think what Will Clark has done particularly well is everybody knows that it has been underfunded. You know, you can go across to League Two clubs in the UK and you can compare the facilities, the stadiums and training grounds, and you can see that there is a major difference in the quality that we have compared to what they have. I think what Will Clark has done very well is actually putting some facts and numbers around that, which then gives you a case to go to government and say, this is how far we are behind, not just England, you know, some of the other countries across the EU. And, you know, I think he's looking at you know, a number of full-time academy coaches. 0% of LOI clubs have a minimum of 4 compared to 36% of international peer clubs. So we definitely need it. It's a great starting point. And yeah, let's just hope that it's used then in a way that helps develop talent, because we have seen in recent weeks with Mason Mealy and Victor the fees that can be commanded when you develop the talent properly.
Do we have the coaches?
Good question. We were just speaking off air there, Shane, and you know, your best coaches are going to be cherry-picked across to the UK as much as your best players are going to be cherry-picked as well. So it's important that you create that funnel of good coaches in the academies. What I would be doing is I'd be looking at maybe the players, particularly in the League of Ireland or across in the UK, seeing the ones that are maybe coming towards the end of their career, earmark them as maybe being the talent that you want to put through the UEFA badges, identify maybe clubs that they could go into. I always think that the players who've played, who know the game, who've experienced big matches or just have a very good understanding of football in general, they are going to be the best ones to nurture the next wave of talent that is to come through. So I would like to see that being put in place, you know, a bit of a structure, a bit of a plan of who the people are going to be that are going to coach this next wave.
Were you encouraged when you were coming to the end of your playing career?
No, I wasn't. Simply because it would have been on a voluntary basis. I went back into Belvedere and I did 3 or 4 years there. I coached a great crop of players, Adam Murphy, who's now at Bristol City. A couple who are now playing in the League of Ireland with the likes of Longford and Pat's underage teams. I loved it, but there was no sort of career path. Like, there just wasn't one there. So I had to wrap up my career early. I was lucky in the sense that I had a degree behind me from UCD, and it was the business world, because it was a more clear route around kind of working your way up a ladder and having something stable there from a career perspective. That didn't exist from a coaching sense. And I would have loved to go into it, because physically I probably didn't have the attributes to play at a top level, but I had the brain and I could see the game and I could probably articulate that in a simple way to the younger generation and help them along that way. So I would hope that there's players who are maybe coming to the end of their career that, you know, could potentially go down and help kids, particularly at that younger age. Like, it's all about ensuring participation is there, Shane, first and foremost, making sure that kids are staying within football. The second piece then is looking at the environment that you're putting them into and ensuring that it's good facilities with good coaching. If you do that, you've got an opportunity then to develop the talent and move them through the ranks. It's great now with the League of Ireland underage systems that there's leagues there that, you know, you can play with your Shamrock Rovers and your Pats and you can see the pathway all the way through to the first team. We have to have that in place, particularly what's happened with Brexit. Like, if people think the drain of talent is there with the international team at this moment in time, we probably haven't felt that full impact of Brexit, because previously our best talent was going to, you know, your top and middle Premier League clubs, which is state of the art facilities, state of the art coaching, and you're getting a great opportunity of carving a career. The League of Ireland clubs is very much built on people volunteering their time. That necessarily means that you're not putting them in the hands of the best coaches and in the best environments. As a result, the opportunity of them playing in the Premier League is diminished. Like, let's be honest about it. We're not going to have the situation whereby you have a 15-year-old going over to a Premier League club like an Evan Ferguson, who then makes his debut for Brighton, and a couple of people are saying, oh my God, who's this fella, Evan Ferguson? Of course we knew of him because he played in the friendlies against Chelsea. But that situation of not having visibility of those players and then they appear in the Premier League scene is not going to happen. We are now going to see kids coming through the League of Ireland teams. They're going to play like a Mason Melia or a Victor, and then they're going to get their move across to the Premier League. So you have to ensure that those years from, say, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, that we're trying to replicate that full-time environment that previously players would have had in the UK.
Will that be difficult for kids not living close to or near a League of Ireland club?
Yeah, I would say so, Ruby. I've just spoken there about the quality of coaching and the environment. Like, contact hours is so important as well. So how do we replicate that full-time environment for kids who are maybe not in a catchment area where there's, let's call it, a grade A academy? That is difficult. I don't know how you set that up, in the sense that they can balance both education and staying in school and also having access to full-time training. I know, speaking of Dublin, and I know that's a little bit easier because kids are within a catchment area, but the likes of St. Pat's and Shamrock Rovers have put them, you know, let's call it their top 10% of players into education, whereby they're able to train with the first team at the Shamrock Rovers in the morning, and then they go off in education, whether that be in the Institute of Education or one of those other third level education or schools that they've teamed up with. So that has worked particularly well. I don't know how you solve that in areas where it's more difficult to get your kids to and from training. That is something that's going to have to be thought out.
Perhaps a regional base, or if you have it, not necessarily League of Ireland club, it'd be League of Ireland academy too.
I think so, because like we talk about 3 million, but if you stretch that across all
of the clubs,
20 clubs, and you incorporate both men's and women's, boys and girls, that starts to, you know, diminish. And I know the aim here is to get full-time coaches, but maybe you do need to have a regional centre where you have a catchment area and you're trying to ensure that everybody has access to that good coaching. But it's definitely, it's a great starting point. And I thought Jack Chambers spoke very well today. I thought the message had been heard. I did go to school with Jack as well.
Full disclosure.
But the message has been heard from government. And I think they're starting to see, particularly with the transfer fees that are coming in for Mason and Victor, that further down the line, maybe the clubs can be a little bit more self-sufficient and you can start to put the money back into the clubs based on what it is they're able to take in for their best talent.
Well, it is good news. The work starts now for Will Clark, Mark Scanlon, and all of the League of Ireland team. But it is a positive starting point. We are continuing our football chat. Mark Langdon's going to join us after the break and round up all the latest European news.
Game on. Association football.
Now, Paul Corry is still with us. Mark Langdon joins us on the line now to chat European football. Mark, let us begin our discussion with Serie A, because Roma manager Gasperini explained fitness concerns were the reason Republic of Ireland international Evan Ferguson was an unused substitute, as the club claimed their fifth win from six. So Evan's not off the mark yet, but Roma are flying high.
Oh, they really are. They've got another forward that can sort of do a very similar role to Evan Ferguson in Dovbyek. Sort of another burly striker that can lead the line on his own, decent with his feet, sort of powerful forward. So I think Gasperini was being on the more cautious side. Obviously, they'd played Thursday, quick turnaround to the the game sort of Sunday. It was an earlier kickoff on the Sunday as well. So maybe there was just a precaution there. But Roma absolutely flying. This was an amazing game. The goals in the match were just right out of the top drawer. Started with Moise Kean for Fiorentina, who had a disappointing time, I think it's fair to say, when he was at the Premier League with Everton. Scored a stunner, but Roma came back, won the game, and I don't know if you saw the game on Thursday that Roma were involved in, where they missed three penalties in one match. It was a good way for them to bounce back from the shock of that defeat on Thursday.
Obviously, Napoli sit top of the Serie A on goal difference. They beat Genoa 2-1 at the weekend. Bit of a stumble, or a stumble for AC Milan, drawing with Juve, missing a penalty.
Yeah, I've been actually surprised with Milan's start to the season. I wasn't expecting them to be as good as what they've been so far. So I wouldn't say it's too much of a stumble. I think if you take the whole season, sort of as an effort in sort of, was it 6-7 games in now? They've done better than I thought under returning coach Max Allegri. But Napoli just keep winning. They're not playing that well at the moment. Kevin De Bruyne was the player that got the winning goal for them. He was very influential in midweek as well for the Champions League, setting up Højlund for his goal. So De Bruyne, I think his legs are gone in terms of the Premier League, and I don't think he would have been able physically to have played at the level that he would have wanted to. But in Italy, it's slightly easier, and he's really thriving at the moment.
Speaking of Milan, so Milan against Como in Perth, Barcelona against Villarreal in Miami, greenlit reluctantly by UEFA, who called it regrettable and exceptional. Is this the moment that we've crossed the line, Mark?
It is a line crossed for me. I mean, I don't think that league games should be sort of played outside of their kind of native sort of land. You know, I think that there's a sort of beauty to a league system where everybody plays the same amount of games at home as they do away. I also admit to being a hypocrite because I've been to watch the NFL in London, and you know there's been NFL in Dublin, and it's on in London at the moment. We're going sort of all over Europe, Germany, and then there's a game at the Bernabeu actually as well next month in NFL. So look, I am I openly admit to being a hypocrite, and I know that there'll be a feeling about growing the game in these kind of, you know, just different places. And I can imagine that Barcelona game particularly, could be a really big deal. But it just still doesn't sit right with me in sort of soccer/football rather than, you know, NFL. I don't care enough about that to feel strongly that where the games are played. But I do in terms of football. And but I suppose the nervousness is just, you know, what happens next. And once you open that Pandora's box, like, what is to stop a whole round of Premier League games being played, just all over the globe? I mean, you certainly couldn't sort of write it off. I mean, it would cause big anger, with the supporters involved. But, it feels one step closer to something like that.
Paul, it is a precedent. And from a business sense, there's lots of other clubs going to want to do this. Do UEFA have to get ahead of it? It's precedent is set. They won't be able to stop this. Do they have to set a limit on it? Two games per league, one game per team. Do they have to get in ahead of this now?
No games per league, Ruben.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, but the precedent is set. You try and get out of that one.
The horse is bolted.
And the Spanish teams have been playing their Super Cup games in Saudi Arabia and out that neck of the woods for must be 2-3 years at this stage. And this money that the Premier League commands is not the same within, say, Serie A and La Liga. So they are looking at different avenues. And if they feel that they can extend their reach and they can bring an extra revenue from playing games in the US and beyond, they will go after that. They will certainly go after that because they have to compete with the likes of your Man Cities and Liverpools and Manchester United. So it's coming. I would be surprised if the Premier League aren't on that bandwagon in the next couple of years.
So didn't they float the 39th game, Richard Scudamore?
And particularly when you think of all the US owners within the Premier League, like they would be all, I can picture Todd Bowley picturing this in the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, like you see all the pre-season competitions now, Mark, are like marketed as it's the Premier League pre-season and everything in America
but
and Australia.
If you go to a Premier League game, like big Chelsea fans in my house, you go to Stamford Bridge, it's all tourists.
Including the ones that fly over from Ireland.
pot kettle.
Case in point. In 2008, that 39th game, I think, was floated Mark Langdon by then Premier League chief Richard Scudamore. Like, are we getting closer in that regard for Premier League teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we just said there about sort of the Premier League teams kind of don't need to do it as much because of their financial advantage might sort of slow down the desperation to move games abroad. But I think once it becomes almost a norm, and you know, once Barcelona have played there, Real Madrid are going to play there, and you know, Juventus are going to want to do the same, and you know, it starts spiraling. The Premier League will then look at it. It takes 14 of them to kind of, you know, to vote and to get something through. Like, what is to stop kind of the big US cohort now kind of getting together and just having a round of games? Maybe in the US, I mean, you know, Saudi Arabia could put up that probably fortunes and take a round of Premier League fixtures. So, I mean, I think it would be naive to say that it couldn't happen in, say, the next 10 years. I think that that would sort of be a foolish thing to say. I'd hope it wouldn't. I think that probably the 39th game is probably a kind of, in some ways, a fairer approach than sort of somebody losing a home game, because at least everybody would then be playing on kind of neutral soil, and you know, maybe there could be a draw to see who gets who, and there could be some excitement in that. But yeah, it feels pretty desperate from La Liga and Serie A to do that, but they're in a desperate state because you know, they're just not able to generate the money that Premier League teams can from their TV deals. And when teams like Crystal Palace and Everton can outspend most of the teams in Spain and Italy, like, something doesn't feel right there either, that the balance there feels off. So I can understand why they're chasing the money, just doesn't sit great.
Yeah, don't forget, like, Perez and co were at the forefront of the European Super League, so they will try everything they can to get those games abroad with time.
Yeah, that is true. On that negative note, there ends our association football chat with traditionalism out the window.
It was a good day.
It was a good day for Irish football. Hopefully it's a good day on Saturday. We'll continue our preview to Portugal Ireland with Keith Tracy tomorrow. Mark Langdon, thank you very much. Paul Corry, thank you very much. Declan Quigley is standing by. We're going to chat motorsport and cycling. Stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM. Game On Motorsport.
Now, Declan Quigley is with us to chat motorsport and recent success for Cycling Ireland across numerous competitions, has to be said. Declan, let us begin our conversation with motorsport and the latest on the F1, as the chances of Lando Norris and Max Verstappen chasing down Oscar Piastri in this F1 title race were impacted, it's fair to say, in Singapore.
Yeah, it was a good one, wasn't it? Yeah, good to see you, Shane. Yeah, Singapore, it seems like missed opportunities are, you know, mounting for Lando Norris. I think that's three races in a row he's managed to outscore his teammate, Oscar Piastri. Piastri retains the lead of the championship, but it's a narrowing margin, but still 22 points, six races to go. It's definitely possible, but you feel like he's semi-missing opportunities a little bit. In fairness, Lando had a good race on Sunday. Singapore is not an easy track to overtake. All the fun really is on Saturday in qualifying. It's a bit like Monaco in that respect, and it is a spectacular racetrack, but it is a little bit frustrating in that they tend not to be able to get past. So he muscles past Oscar at turn three on the first lap. You know, it did sort of double whammy for him really, because he got ahead of Oscar, outscored him by only 3 points, but at the end of the day, Piastri was a little bit miffed. He was very undergruntled, it has to be said, and that's not really the way he plays it. He's incredibly cool. He's almost like...
Is it going to kick off between them?
It's got to. You know, it's funny enough, this is going to play into the whole Alex Dunn conversation that we're going to have in a little while, but I've been saying for months, you cannot have two fast ones, two drivers who are literally within thousands of a second in qualifying, and the difference between them on race day is often dictated by their qualifying position or by some mishap in the pits or whatever. There's vanishingly tiny margins between them, and that cannot last indefinitely. And McLaren have actually done a pretty good job of keeping them all sane and sensible, because they've got their so-called papaya rules. And, you know, it's quite cool that they've managed to manage them for as long as they have. But you just sense that as we're coming down towards the business end of this championship, that the pressure might start to be telling ever so slightly on Oscar Piastri. And he's been leading it for a long time, but he's just starting to get a little bit annoyed. I don't think, honestly, that he had anything to complain about. I think that Lando Norris did a clean overtake, and if they did rub wheels a little bit, it was because, you know, Verstappen had stopped up a little bit ahead of Norris, and Norris just did, you know, touch the back of him. So that was, but it was as clean as you're ever going to get between two championship contenders in the same car, and Piastri, I think, just has to suck that one up.
Lewis Hamilton was in the stewards' room again, was he?
Lewis Hamilton in the stewards' room again.
That one was a bit of a weird one, because he ran out of brakes at the end, and in fairness to Lewis, he kept it on the track more or less. He did have his track limits issues in the last couple of laps, and eventually ended up copping a penalty that put him behind Fernando Alonso, who's given out yards about anyone and everything. He's just so entertaining and so wonderful. The two, you know, mid 40 year olds, it's still duking it out all those years later. But ultimately not a bad weekend actually for Lewis. Out qualified Leclerc, ran ahead of him, had a good strategy that looked as if it was going to pay off. Leclerc ended up ahead of him at the end, but the Ferraris look like the fourth best car at the moment, and that's the real concern and the real worry for them.
You mentioned Alex Dunn. What's the latest? Is he off the Red Bull, or where does the future lie for him?
I know it's taken a little while for an announcement. I mean, it seems, all the information I'm getting, and it was reported on motorsport.ie, and it's worth recording that that's the first place that we heard that he's likely to go to Campos in Formula 2 next year. And he was likely to sign with Red Bull. And we understood that it was already done, but we haven't had any announcement. And Helmut Marko, the sort of stern and austere head of all things driver development in Red Bull, said that, yes, we're in conversation with Alex Dunn. We like what he does. He's incredibly quick. He's making a lot of mistakes at the moment, but he looks like a Red Bull kind of driver. And all the indications are is that, you know, he is going to move from McLaren across to the Red Bull development system, you'd have to say. And
is that a better system?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a better system. What it is an incredible conveyor belt of talent. They've got enormous resource. They have a huge number of drivers on their books in relative terms compared to McLaren. And they also have four drives instead of two available. Now, funnily enough, I mean, McLaren looked like a glass ceiling, didn't it? It looked like it was going to be impossible for Alex to get anything going at McLaren anytime soon. But then Piastri looks a bit miffed. What's going to happen with Lando? Whoever wins the championship at the end of the year, I potentially could see that there is an opportunity for one of those drivers to go to Ferrari in the next year or two, because Lewis Hamilton's not going to last forever. It's as simple as that. And but at any rate, the Dunn people have decided that it makes sense to explore the Red Bull option. Not least, I think, as well, because it's probably a fully funded drive in F2. This is speculation on my part, but that's, funding is very relevant. It's about £2 million to run one of those cars for a year. So if it's fully funded, then, and he's part of that trajectory, and they have four cars because they've got the Racing Bulls as well as the Red Bull team. And the main issue there is, of course, Yuki Tsunoda is 17th in the World Championship. Max Verstappen's running third and winning races. He won four races this year. Tsunoda's really struggling. I mean, he is really, really in trouble, and I think probably gone at the end of the year. Okay. Similarly, Liam Lawson looks very, very vulnerable. Arvid Lindblad is probably going to move up. He's got the super license points necessary, so it looks as if he's going to move up and into the Racing Bulls team. Isaac Hadjar probably promoted into the number one squad. Lawson might just hang on, or else. Now, for Alex Dunn to get a Formula One drive next year, he's got a slight problem in that he's running fifth in the championship, needs to finish top three in order to secure the super license points necessary to get the race license in Formula One. He's got 22 points at the moment. He's going to drop most of those at the end of the year because some of them are coming from GP3 a few years ago. So without getting too bogged down in the details, he needs to close a 31-point gap to finish in the top three in the championship. He's currently running fifth, and that's going to be it's going to be difficult. It has to be said. There's a maximum of 39 points from each race. There's two races left in the championship. Nobody scores 39 points because one of them is a reverse grid race, so you're not going to win both of those races. So to be honest, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility, but that's going to be a tough one. And if he doesn't get the points, then he's obviously not, you know, it's not possible for him to move into Formula One next year. But reserve driver status and going with going back into Formula 2 as an established driver with two race wins already this year, yeah, it's a really strong situation for him.
Okay. So it is points from this year. If he does finish fifth in the Formula 2, he gets 20 points for that. Do they carry over into next year to help him get a super licence?
Yeah,
next season?
He'd hold that and he'd hold 7, so he'd be on 27. And I think 40 is the minimum, isn't it?
To get a licence.
To get your super licence. So to make it next year, he has to get that third place in the championship, which would be the 40. So he'd be 47 then, and that would, because he's dropping his 20... He's dropping loads of them anyway.
Okay. So Alex Dunn, that's the future of Alex Dunn. There's another young Irish man in motorsport. Fionn McLaughlin.
It's amazing, isn't it? From Machaerfelt in County Derry. It's a really cool moment for him in his career. Yeah, really stellar karting career. And went to Jerez last year and won a shootout and got a fully funded drive in became part of the Red Bull Junior team in British Formula 4. And that's the series that Alex Dunn won a few years ago, 22. And that propelled Alex Dunn. I mean, it's the first rung of the ladder, but it's a very, very competitive race series that, and there's some big names have come through it in the past, the likes of Lando Norris just being one notable recent champion in British Formula 4. And Fionn McLaughlin goes out and wins the title at his first attempt, dominated the second half of the season, 5 wins in total. He won it last weekend in Brands Hatch, and he's in great shape now in his career. It's meant that he's now springing up into the FIA Formula 3 series, so things are only getting more competitive, but he's staying with the same team, Hi-Tech, which is actually the same team that Alex Dunn won his Formula 4 championship a few years ago. So I mean, it's remarkable. We haven't had this level of talent on the conveyor belt to Formula 1 for many a long year. I mean, it really, and everyone in Irish racing, the Irish racing community, is really very excited about it.
I'm sure they are. Declan, with your other hat on, the cycling one, in the budget today, the large sport infrastructure fund, 18.7 million. Do you see some of this going towards the building of a velodrome?
I don't know. It's not coming from that money, I don't think, Ruby. As far as I understand, it's upwards of 60 million. I think it's going above that is what's needed to build a velodrome out in Abbottstown on the National Sports Campus. I mean, the money, I understand, is ring-fenced, and it comes from development funding or whatever, for big infrastructure projects. And I mean, that was announced just over a month ago. Minister O'Donovan told everyone that, yeah, it's finally got the green light. So the next part of the process, as I understand, is to appoint the architects. And I think they're a long way down the line. It's just a sort of a rubber stamping situation. They have the ground. They have the design, I think, as far as I understand, is all but complete. I mean, you never really believe it until you see it, you know, because it is an expensive piece of infrastructure. But we are the only country. I mean, you know, I think I looked at the top 25 or 30 nations in world cycling at the Olympics last year, and we were the only one without an indoor velodrome of international standard. I mean, they are everywhere in the world. You know, New Zealand have two of them. New Zealand have one in Invercargill, which is, I mean, it's next up penguin country. It's a long, long way from Auckland, a long, long, long way from Ireland. But, you know, we compare ourselves to New Zealand so often, don't we, in terms of sporting, you know, the potential for sporting excellence. And and they've got two of them. So, yeah, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be key, not just for this generation of Irish bike racers. We've got some a men's team is starting to develop now on the back of the, you know, really excellent women's squad that went to the Olympics last year. And there's a sense there's a real bedrock, actually, in Irish cycling of talent. And, you know, there's a groundswell of excitement that's coming there. It was a bit like the motor racing, actually, yeah.
It is great to see medals for Irish riders at the European Road Championships. Ben Healy picked up a bronze in Rwanda recently as well. And Lara Gillespie was in action. Is Lara Gillespie the best female cyclist Ireland has produced?
Yeah, I was actually thinking this on the way in. It would be very difficult to make an argument against it. I mean, she's an immensely talented rider. And her second place today in the Banche-Chamonix it's a big Belgian one-day autumn classic. Second to Lorena Wiebes, who's, I think, probably the greatest ever sprinter and you know, Lara was the only one able to hold her wheel, and that in itself is something of a win. In actual fact, the level of dominance that Wiebe enjoys in the sprints in the women's game is immense, and I think it actually sends a good signal to everyone ahead of the track world championships coming up in Chile at the end of the month, because Lara's going there. She, you know, got a bronze medal in the worlds on the track last year. She's a European champion in the elimination race as well from this season, and I mean, the sky's the limit. She's completed Tour de France alongside Mia Griffin and Fiona Mangan as well, and it's just an extraordinary, you know, isn't it amazing how you get one or two good riders and then suddenly you've got this great big, you know, pool of talent, and the same thing's happening amongst the men. You mentioned the medals. Ben Healy takes that world championship medal in the World Road Race Championships, first one since 1989, since Sean Kelly at Kigali, and then literally a week later you've got Conor Murphy, Adam Rafferty and David Gaffney producing medals at European Championship level.
Brilliant stuff. We're going to have to leave the conversation here. Declan Quigley, thank you so much for outlining all of that. That is all we have time for this evening. Thank you for listening. I'll be back here tomorrow from 6 p.m. as Ellen Keane catches up with Roisin Urine after her 5-medal haul at the World Para Swimming Championships. Keith Tracy continues our build-up to Ireland's clash with Portugal. And Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news. Today's show was produced by Ronan Lawler. Our BCO was Jarla Holland. Up next, after we check in with the news desk, is the brilliant Beto Da Silva with the new music show. For myself, Ruby and all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Bye-bye.
This is 2FM.